And you are in our study of Jeremiah. And we're in the place where God is making it very clear that the devastation, the destruction that is going to happen by Nebuchadnezzar is not very good. It's very, very terrible. And he makes that clear. They are not listening. They have chosen not to listen. And thus, Nebuchadnezzar is on target, going to come, and God is not going to stand in his way. So now, in the light of that, and in the light of the high places that the Israelites are caught up in, which the world was in that time, their world, is caught up in the high places, and that's where they did all the idolatry. That's where they went in the high places to worship. The higher up, the closer between the heavens and people. And then they would have those special sacrifices to, as the heathen did, to the god Moloch. And they would have that down in the valley, Hinnon, just the bottom part of Jerusalem. In Tophet, they would have the sacrifices. That's where they had the altar. And they would sacrifice children. And Israelites were doing that. So it was getting bad, and couldn't get too much worse. So now, in the light of that, Habakkuk, remember, along with Jeremiah, is looking at the same people. He sees them. And his window, he has a different window that he's looking through, but he sees the Nebuchadnezzar coming. And he asks the question, why isn't Israel chastened? Why isn't Israel judged? How can Israel do so poorly and not be judged? And you would recall, God makes very clear, whom the Lord loveth, he does what? He chastens. If he doesn't love you, you aren't legit. If he loves you, you're going to be chastened, disciplined, and that's what's needed, discipline. If you don't have discipline, then you will not have good direction. You'll have lousy desires. It'll come out poorly. And that's what our society is, without discipline. They have no discipline. No need for discipline. That's why you get all the killings and the bad stuff. Because people say, I can do what I want, when I want, how I want, if I want, so what? And I've always been able to do it since a little boy, and I can keep doing it. And then the people are frustrated. So when they get big enough, a frustrated little boy is one thing, a frustrated teenager is another. And keep going up and makes for problems. So now, so the question, why, God, aren't you judging Israel for doing so badly? And then the next question, you know, is why are you going to judge them with the Chaldeans? God said, I'm going to judge them, and Nebuchadnezzar is my instrument. So now when you read, just to remind you, in Habakkuk chapter 1, verse 6, for lo, I raise up the Chaldeans, that's Nebuchadnezzar, that bitter and hasty nation, which shall march through the breadth of the land to possess the dwelling places that are not theirs. They are terrible and dreadful. Their judgment and their dignity shall precede them. In other words, they're very, very proud. Very, very, like, remember that Babylon is the head of gold in the Daniel 2. Babylon's the head of gold, and they're it. They don't answer to anybody, including God. So they're very, very uppity about everything. Verse 8, their horses also are swifter than the leopards, and are more fierce than the evening wolves. And their horsemen shall spread themselves, and their horsemen shall come from afar, and they shall fly as the eagle that hasteneth to eat. So it's in verse 9. And they shall come all for violence, their faces shall sup up as the east wind, and they shall gather the captivity as the sand. In other words, they're very hungry, and they're going to gobble up and devour everything. They're going to level, rape the land, rape the people. Bad news. And kill. So there'll be no more place to bury anybody. No more place. Wow. That's what's going to happen. Now, so having said that about Habakkuk, and looking at that, now in the light of that, Habakkuk, go with me over, if you would please, to the end. And I do that because you're looking at the high places in Jeremiah 7 and 8, and those high places are horrible high places. And we touched on it last time, and I just want to add to it in another way, in a way that would be very helpful, I hope. Because Habakkuk really is going to trust God. And you remember, chapter 2, you know Habakkuk. And in chapter 2, verse 4, behold, his soul which is lifted up is not upright in him, but the believing heart, the just shall live by his faith. Faith in the faithfulness of God. That's what you're going to do. And Habakkuk is full of faith. He's going to get it. He's waiting on God because he needs an answer. He needs to understand the content, character, and condition of the day. So now, Habakkuk chapter 3. In Habakkuk chapter 3, picking up, please, remember now, he's looking, and he's already, I just read you enough to let alone what he's looking at. Just read you what the Nebuchadnezzar is going to do in 10 years or less. He's going to do it. And they aren't budging. And Habakkuk is concerned and looking for understanding. Now, and God gives it to him. And before I do that, chapter 3 and in verse 2, you know, O Lord, I have heard thy speech and was afraid, O Lord. Revive thy work, revive it, give it life, recover thy work, what you're doing, God, in the midst of the years, make known in thy wrath, remember mercy. God, you're going to do what you're going to do. You need to do it. And you're going to have to judge. The way you do it, how you do it, is up to you. But in doing it, God, remember mercy. And you always want to say that. Like Psalm 43, judge me, O God, first. And do it, Jeremiah 10, remembering mercy. Judge me, but remember mercy. You got it? And God does. God does that. Now, so Habakkuk, chapter 3 and verse 16, as you know, it's refreshing. And Israel had such a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful journey they were to have in time. But they didn't have it because they didn't believe. And that's why Nebuchadnezzar is coming, because they didn't believe. They didn't believe it was possible that God could be that good. God could be that great. That God could be that gracious. They just didn't believe that. Not many people believe it today either. They don't believe it. No, they don't. They don't believe that. Now watch. So now, here's closing. God, how are you going to leave it with us so we can have the message that you gave to Habakkuk to the heart of the believing remnant? Verse 16, when I heard, my belly trembled, My lips quivered at the voice of rottenness, and the voice at the voice of rotten voice. Rottenness entered into my bones, and I trembled in myself. And I'm going to stop there just for a moment. And therefore, here I am looking at these things. And God, when I sought you out in the light of seeking, I got the message, God, and the Chaldeans are coming, and boy, they are noted for their terribleness. And therefore, God, the problems of Israel are going to be, and the trouble Israel is in for is terrible. So therefore, I am trembling, quivering. Rottenness is in my bones. The fear is stirring me up. All my bones. And the trouble, when that happens, just put it together, if you would. And the trouble of all that is bones that are very dry. And when you stir up very dry bones, they're very dead. They're very dead. And you would know, I say, and reach in and find the dead. Bones. And when bones are dried up, when you know your condition's like this, you want a happy camper. Do you understand? You want a happy camper like this. And so, in the light of that, think of a piece of wood that is rotten. Why is it rotten? Because there is no sap, no life in it. Rotten wood is rotten. And when you get to the place where there's nothing within you, when everything is being taken from you, and the problem is you're bankrupt to start with. When it comes to solutions, you don't have any. So when you start pulling out your solutions, they don't work. They don't comfort, they don't help, they don't have any hope. And the pulling them out, bankrupt, trying to pull them out, and there's no comfort. So now, that's what he's doing. He's seeing it, and in and of himself, there is no solution for this. You can't fix Israel. They're doing what they do. You can't change the Nebuchadnezzar's army to be nice, because they're terrible. You can't change God's will and God's judgment. You can't do anything about anything. How do you fix it? There's no resources. We're bankrupt. And the situation reveals how bankrupt we are. Now, so in the light of that, and remember, the worm eateth away. And thus, it doesn't come out good at all. Therefore, Habakkuk, you are feeling what it's like if you don't put God into the equation. If you leave God out of the room, you're in the room all by your lonesome. If you leave God out of the room, you're in here all alone. And you're gonna, and that's, think of that now. So in the light of that, and they go on to say, terror, trembling, fear. I trembled in myself, fear. I trembled in myself, to fear is the word, to tremble, to be moved, to be thrown into great commotion. And thus to be, thrown into great commotion and moved by fear, and I am trembling in myself, in the place where I stand. My flesh fails. My faith, if I don't, without God, this is a horrible, horrible situation in my life. And thus rottenness in my bones. So now, and in the process, that's looking at the big picture. the big picture, on the world in which you live. And that world is getting more and more like Jeremiah's world. Only we aren't looking at it as Israel and Nebuchadnezzar. We're looking out the window at a whole world system that is moving rapidly in where it's headed and what it's up to. And it includes Israel, but it includes the whole world, includes our country, includes our home, our city, where we live. First World War, we got away with. The Second World War, we got away with. Korean War, Gulf War. But boy, this one, we're going to get caught in. We escaped all them. But you aren't going to escape the tribulation in this country. No, we're going to get it. And we've never had to have that. No, remember years ago in the Second World War, on the coast of East Coast, up there in New Hampshire and all that. And I was saying it the other day to somebody. It just popped into my mind. And the great coast defense guns were mounted, Salisbury, Hampton, up through there, big coast defense guns pointing out to the ocean to shoot the submarines that were coming. So they're up there. Now, and that whole area up there, you have to be familiar with up there. I used to work up there for a long time. And you don't care what I did. And in the process up there, we could have bought, my dad and I walked down the street during that time, during the war, and walked down. It was all empty, of course, kind of the war. No one was on the beach. No one was in the area. It was empty. And when you walk down, and the little sign on the whole block, big city block, and it said, for sale, $6,000. You don't need to know anymore. You got the idea. And thus, dear friend, in the light of that, we're in a world like that. And if you go, we don't have to take time there. But if you went and looked at in Psalm 32 and that, David goes through it. My tears day and night. I'm living in the God, your hand is heavy upon me. And that was a personal thing. And David had to go through that judgment, chastening, in order to be blessed. And God had to do that for David. You know why God did that for David? Because he loved him. That's why he did it. He loved him. And he gave him some good old beating for doing what he did. Wow. Because he loved him, and he's going to bless him. In fact, he says so in Psalm 32. The very God who did this to me for a whole year. Boy, did I wake up. But boy, you know, I got it. God, what did you mean it for? You love me and you're going to bless me. And that's what God did. Now, so here in Habakkuk, here is Habakkuk. And at the end of verse 16, if you would, and I will rest in the day of trouble. I will rest in the day of trouble. And you'll note, please, in the process of that, I will rest in the day of trouble. So here I am, to put it together. A, I'm standing there, standing, looking out at the Israel, looking up to Nebuchadnezzar coming. I'm looking at all of that. I'm facing, looking him, and it's not pleasant. To me, it's not pleasant, as it is, trying to use my own resources and my own sight. It would be like going, if it's any help to you, think of going to the dentist, and you have a bad tooth. But the bad tooth isn't quite as fearsome as the thought of going in the dentist's office with his big needle. So you're hesitant to go get your tooth taken care of because of the dentist's needle. A doctor, make believe, you're going to go, and here's the doctor, and you're going to go, and you have discomfort here and there, and you have apprehension, you have you're worried, what's the doctor going to say? What's the doctor going to say? What's going to be what's going to happen? A fear. Jeremiah, Habakkuk, is looking. I don't want to scare you. Habakkuk is looking, and so is Jeremiah. Habakkuk is looking, and that's, boy, like looking at something you don't want to have to go into, you don't want to have to think about. But, secondly, in verse 16, I might rest in the day of trouble when he cometh up unto the people. He will invade them with his troops. When he comes, I'm going to rest. I'm going to rest in that. The word rest means to set oneself down. To set oneself down and sit down, to rest, literally, from labor, from trouble, from calamity. I'm not going to sit and worry about it. There's no sense in that. It's going to happen. It has to happen. And thus, it's going to happen. I'm going to rest. I'm going to rest. Because it isn't in my hands to do anything one way or the other. I can't stop it. I can't fix it. All I can do is stand and see what happens and learn from it. And so, therefore, I'm going to rest. Literally, I'm going to rest. And here's the new thing coming and looking. And in calmness, I'm going to do so. In the hour of trial, I'm going to be calm, resting. And thus, verse 17, and I'm going to do so, even though he gives you a description from a way to understand what he's looking at. Although the fig tree shall not blossom, because they're going to rape the land, rape the trees, everything's going down to build things, to make things, knock it down, strip the land. Although the fig tree shall not blossom, neither shall fruit be in the vines, the labor of the olive shall fail, and the fields shall yield no meat, the flock shall be cut off from the fold, and there shall be no herd in the stalls, because the enemy's going to take all of them. Now, having done that, it's going to take them all, no question. So I'm determined now. I understand. I'm going to be realistic, and it's very important to be realistic rightly. And he's declared his determination to stay in the process, to stay in the game. You don't quit the game, as it were. You're playing, even though the opponent seems to be winning. You stay in the game to play to the end. Now, that's his job. And he sees that. He sees that. And he's determined to do so. In other words, God is doing something in order to produce something. In order to make it fix Israel, you have to have all this stuff happen. That's a process. And if you don't go through the process, how are you going to get the product? If you want in your life peace, joy, power, understanding, how are you going to get that? That's a product and a process. And you have to go through it. You don't just get that for nothing. You don't learn that for nothing. You must experience. You must go through it. That's how you learn. We just did it with discernment last night a little bit. Discernment is so critical to understand what is right and what is wrong. When is that correct and incorrect? To say this, to say that, to do this, to do that. Discernment. And you won't get it if you don't go through the exercise. You got to go through it. That's how you learned it. Now, having said that, in verse 17, so we now go, if we can, he's declared to do whatever, and if I can, in verse 18, chapter 3, 18, yet. You aren't going to be down in the mouth. No. I realize things aren't good. They're bad. And they're not going to get any better. They're going to get worse. And that's all right. That's all right. I understand. It's all the stuff I'm looking at. I'm looking at the tree. I'm looking at the forest. I'm looking at the house. I'm looking at the building. When Nebuchadnezzar comes, that's all going to be gone. All going to be gone. Wow. And all those people walking up and down, they're going to be gone. And I understand that. So now, having said that, I understand. I'm realistic. I have to be. Verse 18, yet, I will rejoice in the Lord. I will rejoice in the Lord. I'll rejoice. The word rejoice is to move, sound, or make sounds that are happy sounds, not sad. I will rejoice in the Lord. I will joy, that's movement. I will joy in the God of my salvation. I'm not going to be sad. God, you're doing wonderful things in a wonderful way because you love Israel. Uh-huh. And you love me. So here we are. We're going to work it all out. And in the process, I'm going to delight myself in who you are. I'm determined to rejoice. I'm determined to look to you with all my heart. Now, having said that, now you're ready for verse 19. Remember now, it tore me up inside. I was going to rest, look to God. I was realistic and paid attention to the realities that I understood. And I'm going to go with him. If God is, I'm going with him. I'm going to trust him. And I'm going to rejoice because God, you're doing something, what you do and whatever you do is good. So therefore, I'm going to rejoice in you and your saving grace. I'm going to do that. And verse 19 now, you know, that's the point. The Lord God is my strength. The Lord is my strength, my ability for my body, my mind, the vigor, the life. Think of the dried, rotten wood and wood, the tree limb that's connected, and the vitality of the life of the trunk comes into the tree and gives the branch great leaves and fruit and life. No matter what, bugs, storm, winter, rain, it just has life. The Lord God is my strength. He is the vitality. He takes care of the rottenness of wood, and he gives life to the wood. And God, that's what you do. You give life. Now, if you said, listen, I want you to be able to reproduce what Michelangelo could do. I want you to reproduce what Beethoven could produce. Now, who would you say it to in 7 billion people that could reproduce Beethoven? We don't know anybody. Unless Beethoven stepped into your life, you could not do it. And Beethoven could never do it. But God can. See? No one else can. The devil comes along and plays with us. But God is alone can reproduce for the piece of wood to give it life. Whose life? His life. You see? Hang on. His life. Wow. That's what we're for. We're just a branch, isn't it? John 15. We're just a branch for life. Now, and so, the Lord God is my strength. He will make my feet like hinds' feet, a deer's feet, fallow, swift, sure, strong feet. Confident, comfortable feet, full of agility. He'll make my feet like hinds' feet. Now, God, what are you after? Well, Israel is supposed to be the highest nation, the best nation, the most special nation of all nations ever, isn't it? They're at the top of the pile. And they're at the top of the pile to show all the other nations to worship the Most High God. Now, Israel, how do you show is the nations that you they are to worship the Most High God? They're building all their high places with their idolatry. How do you show them? God, what have you done? You have made Israel Most High, like you. And you've given them hinds feet to tread the high places, to be up above all. You think about that. We have a statement, you read it, every church in Revelation 2 and 3, all assemblies that are real believers are supposed to be what? Overcomers. Aren't they? Are they? Are they overcomers? More than conquerors? There are people like no people. I was just talking to Larry today. I spent time doing it. And in the process, we were sharing that. That if we pursue this kind of thinking, we are odd ducks, if you really believe that. If you really pursue God like that, no one does that. Wow. Larry said we're odd ducks. We are odd. And we're rejected by the system. And we really, really are, I hate to tell you, we really are pushed back. Because you can't be like that. Aha, wrong. God, Israel had hinds feet. And he will make them walk, verse 19, make me, Habakkuk, walk upon mine high places. Now, Israel's going up in an idolatrous way to high places to try to find some comfort, peace, security apart from God. There isn't any. But, Habakkuk, here you are down in the muck and mire. And you are already on the high place. You talk from a high place. You think from a high place. You operate from the most with the Most High God in a most wonderful way. And you are sufficient. Wonderfully, wonderfully sufficient. In the midst of darkness and bankruptcy. Hinds feet for high places. Now, let me just go a little further. Or if you would please, in the light of that. Remember now, the hind deer... Deers, you ever seen them in the film and stuff, they jump from rock to all these rugged rocks up in the hills, mountains, and they jump all over the place. And edge of rocks, I don't know. I never figured out how they could do that, but they did. They're hind. They're made to do it. Made to do it. Wow. Over, if you would, please. Deuteronomy chapter 32. Deuteronomy chapter 32. In Deuteronomy chapter 32, you would recall God in his wonderful grace. If I can, and in, chapter 33, Deuteronomy 33, better, 32 is good, chapter 13, verse 13, but chapter 33, going directly to verse 29, this is Israel now, Israel, God would bless them, he would be verse 27, the eternal God is thy refuge, and underneath are the everlasting arms. He shall thrust out the enemy from before thee, and shall say, destroy them. Israel then shall dwell in safety alone. The fountain of Jacob shall be upon a land of corn and wine. Also his heavens shall drop dew down. Verse 29, happy art thou, O Israel, who is like unto thee. O people saved by the Lord, the shield, the protector of thy help. And who is the sword? The sword, the one that maintains the sword, the protection, the sword of thy excellency. Where is your help? Where is your excellency? It's found in God. And thine enemies shall be found liars, hypocrites, feigned, that they have no power. Unto thee, and thou shalt tread upon their, T-H-E-I-R, their high places. And all that they claim and all that they have to say, we're above and better than, more than, other than. The believing heart in Israel was above them all. And everything they claimed to have and capable of doing and having and being, Israel was better than them in every single area. You couldn't beat them. You couldn't beat Israel. If Israel was right with God, all the world's everything, money, fame, pride, power, possessions, nothing compared to Israel. No power. No covetousness. No envy. No jealousy. Hey, you're in the top. They are high places. So everything that they would push and promote, Israel would more than overcome it by being God's, the Most High God's chosen vessel to walk in the high places of all the world and all the pomp and all the paraphernalia of the world. Israel would have hinds feet to be more than a conqueror. But you know, they didn't do it. They didn't do it. There was someone, though, who did in Israel. Israel as a nation funked out. But that, and the church is flunking out. So what do we do? Do we all quit, back down, and let it all go into the sewer? And say, hey, this is all we got. And you can't compete with the world system. You aren't going to compete with the system and the young world and the millennial generation and all that stuff. Listen, they only have one thing going for them. And that's something in their head and heart that is bankrupt. And since the adult world doesn't have anything, they're pushing for it and they're going to get it. They're doing it. Everyone's conforming to the, more or less to what they want from colleges and speakers and all of that stuff. Wow. So now, but that doesn't mean that the Jewish believer couldn't. Go with me over to Psalm 18, you know. Psalm 18. In Psalm 18, picking up, please, in thought. God, you're going to give them all these wonderful things. I am going to do that. And in Psalm 18, here's David picking up in the middle of the psalm. Psalm 18, well, I'll go, look at verses 1-2. 18:1, I will love thee, O Lord, my strength. The Lord is my rock, personal. My fortress, personal. My deliverer, personal. My God, personal. My strength, personal. In whom I will trust. My buckler, my shield, personal. And the horn of my salvation, personal. And my high tower, he is. He's all of that to me. He's everything. He's all I need. Aha. So now, having said that, you slide over along the journey over to, verse 27. For thou wilt save the afflicted people, but will bring down high looks, That's what got him in trouble in the first place, pride. Verse 28, and thou will light my candle. The Lord my God will lighten my darkness. And God, here I am, and my little heart, you're going to give the light of, you are the light, to give light to my life, so that I can see and understand. Verse 29, for by thee have I run through a troop, and by my God have I leaped over a wall, etc. As for God, his way is perfect. The word of the Lord is tried. He is a buckler, a shield to all those that trust in him. For who is God save the Lord, or who is a rock save our God? It is God that girdeth me with strength. He maketh my way perfect. He maketh my feet like hinds' feet, and he sets me on my high places. My high places. God, remember Beethoven? He can't do a thing for you. If he was here, he couldn't. But God, what can you do? God, you are the Most High God. You have made Israel the highest specialist people of all the earth. You have made the church even more special as your body, more special than Israel. Your body, more special. Wow. So here's this specialness. Uh-huh. And in the process, God, what are you doing? God, you are high. You want us to walk on the highest, most wonderful will for our life. Your will, your thoughts that are higher than heaven, your thoughts to us that are more than the sand of the sea. You want us to be there, to enjoy and exercise and experience your thinking. You want us there. Uh-huh. That's my will for your life. And I'm in your life to make it happen. Beethoven isn't. I am. What did I receive you as my Savior for? For a ticket for heaven? Some religious activity? No, it was something marvelous to happen in a moment of time. I go from death to life. And God, you have made it a part of your wonderful person, and you're in the person, the believing heart, to make all of it possible. So we're to live in such a high place, with hind's feet, to be able to travel in the valley of the shadow of what? Of death. Not only to go to the valley, but to go to the top. And to have the very benefit of Almighty God in a dark and dead world. My hind's feet for my high places. And all the world's going to come along and try to entice me to get me and catch me, and my mind, my old nature will play the game with me. But you know, God already told us what to do. 2 Corinthians 10:3-4, casting down every thought and every high thing that what? Exalteth itself against the knowledge of God. Bring it into obedience. Hold it. The world does not. I control the high places in Christ. They do not control you. You control them. If you're a believer, then exercise it. Exercise it. You're free to do so. Why do you let the world, why do you let your old nature run you down? And the high places win. Wrong ones. You want his high place. You want your high places. That's God's will for your life. David, verse 32, he maketh my feet like hinds' feet, and setteth me upon my high places. He teacheth my hands to war, so that a bow of steel is broken by mine arms. Thou hast given me the shield of thy salvation, and thy right hand hath holden me up, and thy gentleness, to turn and rely and answer somebody, to bow down to answer them. And a wonderful way to translate that: God, you have made me great. You have troubled yourself about me. You would take time to trouble yourself about little old me. Your gentleness, said David, hath made me great. You see? Wow. Wow. And, as you know, so in the light of that, so God, you've given this gentleness so that you're going to trouble yourself about us? Uh-huh. I am. And by the way, I want you to have hind's feet. I want you. You have to learn to trust me. You have to know that you are very special. Do you think you're very special? I can tell you're all very special, excited about it. And so you aren't. If you're a real believer, you are very special to God. Very special. Of all the things in forever, you are his prize. That ought to do something to you if it ever gets through to your head and mine. God said, I made you. Enjoy the high places. That's what it's all about. It's all about you. We just read it, the other family altar or something. My glory. I want you to be where I am to see my glory, John 17:24. I want you to see my glory. Verse 22, I have given you my glory. I gave you my glory. Here, now. So that you'd get a little bit exercised and excited about being a believer and be one. Until, and while I wait for you to be with me where I am, to see my glory, to see all of it. Wow. Wow. That's pretty good. God, and Israel, you know, Israel's just going to plain old miss out. Just going to plain old miss out. In closing, over if you would to Hebrews. In Hebrews, chapter 12. Hebrews chapter 12. You know, after the great catalog of believing believers that believed in Hebrews 11. Then you come to chapter 12. Wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us and gets us sidetracked, our unbelief, etc. And let us run with patience, bearing up under the load, no matter what, going to run the race. Can't back off. Don't back away. Is that what you told us, Habakkuk? Yes. I didn't turn away from Jerusalem and run. I stood there and watched and waited. I did that. You don't back away. You head straight for God. Everything in your life, may it cause you to head straight for the heart of God. Monday, work, home, school. Head for God. You want help so you don't get discouraged, depressed, depleted. You know, head for God. You want to get out of it? Get to God as quick as you can. There's no other way. Any other way? Foolishness. Hebrews 12. Therefore, run the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author, the leader, and the finisher, the one who completes. He's the one, when you got saved, He put you on the right track. He that hath begun a good work in you is going to finish it. He got you on the right track. And by the way, He's going to get you through all the opponents, obstacles. Everything's in the way, like a football field going down, and all kinds of opposition. Everything's in the way. And He's going to see that you get to the goal line. That's what He's going to do. He's the finisher. He's the one that starts, and He's the one that's going to finish. If you let Him, you can do it with delight. 2 Peter. Fruitful. Or you can be bankrupt and no fruit. Up to you. Wow. Wow. So now, thus, and in the light of Habakkuk, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before Him, had a wonderful, wonderful picnic, and went and was given many, many trophies and rewards. Is that what He was happy about? What made Him so delighted? He was going to go to the cross in the will of God, for the glory of God, for you and me. What are we doing? We're going through the thick and thin of it in the world and the church and all the rest of the stuff. We're going through it, and we're going to do it. And it isn't. What's a delight? It isn't a delight. It's necessary for the process to get to the product. And we have to go through it. And in going through it, as we do, in the corridor of time, God's going to bring us to the goal line. And God's going to do it in the most wonderful way. And God never said it was a picnic. He never said that at all. In fact, he warned you. That's why most people, believers, never join the church, never do whatever. They don't want to pay the price of being that committed. They don't want to do it. They got things in their life and that they don't want to do it. Don't tell me there isn't something somewhere. There's something somewhere, no matter how you cut the cookie. So now, God, here we are. And God, He endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of God. Verse 3, consider Him that endured such contradiction of sinners against Himself, lest you become weary and faint in your minds. Don't you think you got it hard? Compare, He went to the cross, and you're going to tell Him your situation, your needs are worse than His? Is that what you're going to tell Him? He just told you that. He said, don't, before you tell you can't do this, you compare yourself to what I did on the cross for you. And then we'll talk. Make a realistic comparison of what you are going through and what I went through. And then we'll talk. Wow. Anyway, I got to quit. I hope you got a little bit. It's a wonderful thing, really. You have such a high privilege. And I'm going to check all your feet when you go out. See that you have hinds feet. Anyway, you might have a particular request. Remember the teen. Remember the Dorcas. Remember the sick, the weak. We got them. We got them there. God help us. So God deal with us.